Welcome to Book Club for Movies, everybody. It's the week of July 15th. I'm Ryan Miller, and we decided to do it this week. The show, I should elaborate, Matt Amberg.
That was a weird segue into who I am, into like who I feel like now that I'm saying that, I'm like, well, obviously internet personality.
It's no weirder than anything we've done.
Yeah, so Ryan has something to tell you all about why we're not doing Sunshine.
We're not doing Sunshine, everybody. If you listen to Tuesday's show, it was my birthday on Thursday. My wife planned quite possibly the big 4-0 actually too. Did I not mention that?
You know what? I was thinking about that and I realized, oh my gosh, that means 40. I'm going to be 40 this year too.
That means you're going to be 40 this year. Are you just 1 year? It gets more and more. You're 2 years younger than me, 3 years.
Oh, I guess I'll be 40 next year. Yeah, I'll be 40 next year.
See, okay, I knew it. You know what it is? I get older and you stay the same age.
All right.
It's the movie show.
Well done.
It is the movie show. No, wait. I was introducing why I didn't do. So I didn't edit the Upstream Color show, which why am I telling you that anyways? Because it's going to be out certainly before this is out. So I hope you enjoyed that show. This one we're recording, like I said, the week of July 15th. So you'll get it all at some point and you'll love it.
Yeah, Sunshine will end up next week, and that's fine.
Yes, that's also, I guess, a good piece of information.
Yeah, and I already put that up on the Twitter.
Oh, so. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. You've got the calendar up there? I haven't looked myself.
I don't have the calendar.
I
have had neither time to try and log into the website and try to remember how to do that.
We're working on it, guys. We are working on it.
It's, you know, we're old.
Yes, we are.
Well, you are.
That's how we, yes. Thank you.
That's how we stay young. Is that what you were going to say?
No, that's how we started the show. We have no trick for staying young. Obviously, like I said, we've all aged.
Yeah.
I have aged.
Age ain't nothing but a number, but it really affects my brain.
Yes. It's also, and your body.
Yeah.
And
which is the worst. Like, hey, body, could you not break down at all?
Your body's not the worst. I've seen far worse bodies. I have the internet.
Adults only.
You're very sexy. So
it's going to get blue in here tonight, guys. turn off the lights, crank up the candles, and let's listen to some Barry White, and let's get into some movies.
So, Sunshine next week. This week, we do have enough movies to just rattle them off. It's the rest of the show. It's one of those catch-alls that we do to get us all up to date. It's the least that we could do, quite literally. And figuratively, hey. So we're not going to talk about just one movie and then talk about what you talked about in that one movie. We're going to talk about two movies that you didn't know we were going to talk about and that we did mention and that you might know.
Wow!
Our Spider-Man Far From Home, Glass, and Midsommar.
Yeah, I have one more. I have
who goes
one
first? Oh, you do have one more.
One.
You remembered
one. And I'm gonna start off. I'm gonna kick this off because I don't have a ton to say about this,
okay.
But I do want to mention it. So watched The Spy Who Dumped Me. It has Kate McKinnon and Mila Kunis, Justin Theroux.
Right.
Yeah.
The trailers didn't look horrible for that thing, actually.
So that movie is not horrible.
Okay, see?
It is a very serviceable action comedy that gives, this is really almost more of a kind of a showcase extra for McKinnon than anything.
I kind of got that feeling too.
Yeah, and it's cool. Like, she's great. She's really fun in the movie. And Mila Kunis does a really good job being the straight man with the ability to still be funny.
I could totally see that.
Yeah, and she does a great job with it. And the movie was it was very entertaining. We both, Beth and I, enjoyed it. It's not something I'll go back to ever, but it was a lot of fun. Totally worth a watch. And it had a quote in it that has stuck with me since we watched it. And it's such a good quote, and it totally, here we go. Hey, Book Club for Movies, where we air our therapy sessions. The quote is,
that was going to be a funny one.
It's not even a little bit,
okay. Okay.
But one of the characters asks Mila Kunis, why can't you finish anything you do? And her response is, because I'm afraid of being average.
Mm.
That's like, I can't even remotely state how I'm sure a billion other people in the world go through that, but I know I do.
I feel like
time.
I should end the show unfinished right now.
It's going to be very average.
I'm 49% joking, so we can continue.
See, you didn't hit average, so we can keep going.
Oh, actually, I went backwards on that. I meant to say I was 51% joking, so we can continue. If I was 51% not joking, I would have no choice but to end the show.
Yeah. 49%, you still had no choice, honestly.
So you would recommend watching that movie?
Yeah, I think it's fun. I think it's a cute movie. It's entertaining. It's, you know, if you like Kate McKinnon and you want to see her do a little more Kate McKinnon stuff that's not... I mean, you know, it's Saturday Night Live Kate McKinnon, where she's not going completely overboard.
Is it? Because I feel like her movie work has been a bit different than what I see most of the time on Saturday Night Live from her.
It's funny because I feel like she has the... she has that almost the Jim Carrey was kind of still Jim Carrey on In Living Color.
Oh no, that's a good comparison. That is absolutely no. I see where you're going.
But I think that she is going in that kind of. But she hasn't. I don't think she has had the right vehicle. Like she hasn't had her Ace Ventura.
No.
But nope. I think she's gonna get one, and I think she's gonna kill that if she keeps going, because she is so funny.
She is. And so. It's not, I shouldn't say it's the, her movie work I think is bad, but
No.
I feel like when she gets involved, and I think we've already said that we enjoyed her movie work, but I think when she gets involved in kind of a long form character, it's really interesting because she's so strong in these like short, like just weirdos on SNL that.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. All right. I may check that out.
All right. Ping pong
to
you.
We're going to volley this thing? Okay.
Yeah, why not? I mean, do you want me to go through? I can go through.
No, that's fine. You're right. I like it when we volley too. You want Glass or Spider-Man? I'll let you choose.
Oh, let's go with Glass. We'll save the new ones for the end. And
Glass.
I still have this sitting waiting for me.
Okay, that's good. That's just kind of a final. And that'll lead in. I want to give an update on my Road to Endgame as well, that show we're going to do.
Oh, terrific.
So that'll fit right in with Spider-Man.
Fantastic.
Glass is obviously that sequel you didn't know was happening between Split and Unbreakable. We have talked about Split in that we both watched it and enjoyed it.
Yeah, liked it
a lot.
Thought
it was good. One of the better Shyamalamas out there.
Absolutely.
We've also talked, I feel like, several times about Unbreakable. Not that we've seen it recently or talked about it because we watched it, but just because it's one of our favorites. It's top three Shyamalama for me, easily.
Yeah. It's definitely top three. I don't know. Yeah, it's top three.
Then that's a fun discussion, right? Because then Unbreakable, Signs might also be in my top three, but it would be nowhere near yours.
Because I think Unbreakable is probably my number one, but I also think, and this is the one where you would go, whoa, no, I would put The Visit up there because I love.
Ooh, Visit was good. No,
everything
was good
about that movie. I loved it.
You know what? That would be a really good discussion because I think I like The Visit as far as his new wave Shyamalama goes.
Sure.
I think I probably like The Visit better than Split.
Oh.
For sure. Actually, I don't even know why I said probably in that sense.
That's an interesting conversation for sure.
Did you like Split better than The Visit?
No, I love The Visit, but I can totally, like, Split I think is an incredible movie, so I'm interested in the why.
Huh. I don't think Split is an incredible movie. I guess might have something to do with it.
Okay.
I liked it. I didn't think it's good.
Let me back this up.
Okay.
Let me back it up because I will clarify, and you're making a good point. Movie-wise, I think it's a good movie. I think it's a great movie to a point. James McAvoy.
Performance. Gotcha.
That is unbelievable. That performance, like his work there is, that's fantastic.
And you know what? Let's start out on a positive with Glass. I think he might be the highlight of this thing, and not just him and his character work, but I don't think Split did a great job of, which is strange to say because the movie is largely about him, you know, the Split person.
Yeah.
I don't think it did a great job characterizing him, and maybe that's hard with whatever it is, 20 characters and one man. The performance is good, but what Glass does with that character, I really, really liked. It was kind of off-putting at first because, and I forget her, what's her name in the movie? Do you remember?
Sarah Paulson.
Sarah Paulson? No, no, no.
I don't know who you're talking about.
The actress is Anya Taylor-Joy, but I don't know her character's name.
Oh, from Split. Yeah, I don't remember her
name. The main girl from Split.
Yeah.
It's a little off-putting at first because she comes into the movie very much, I guess it's not now thinking back to Split, but it's weird because at the end of Split, where you feel like there was, I don't know if it was Stockholm syndrome or it was her, like she had to manipulate and understand Wendell Crumb. Was it James Wendell Crumb? Kevin Wendell Crumb, which is the name of the actual, like the base personality, the actual given born name of McAvoy's character in Split and Glass. She had to come to an understanding with him so that she could escape or use him for escape. But I don't know. I think the movie ended at a point where we wouldn't have seen the complete repercussion of that anyways, or the complete explanation even.
Okay.
Which is fine. I think Split ends in a good spot regardless. But in Glass, they do a lot more work with where he came from, kind of why he is the way he is, which is spotty territory. Like, that turns out bad probably more often than not, I would say. Especially sure. in a sequel.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it might be interesting if you're invested in the franchise or the character already.
It's always a you know, crapshoot when you try to over-explain something, or you try to give an explanation to it, you know?
Especially for Shyamalan, I would say. Like, he might not have a great track record when it comes to that. Like, he's a very, like, he's strongest when he knows his less is more stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but I like what they did with it in Glass. They turn him into a sympathetic character, which seems strange, but his connection with Anya Taylor-Joy's character turned out really cool and heartfelt in a way I was not expecting, especially given kind of everything else that surrounds it in that movie. And I don't know if you heard about Glass. Have you seen it yet?
I have not seen it, but once again, this is a thing that I could not be avoided. So I'm very aware of.
Oh, you're, well, I don't know if there's much to spoil even. I mean, the premise is that, you know, there's Bruce Willis's character, there's Samuel Jackson's character, and there's James McAvoy's character. They're all committed and in the same insane asylum where Sarah Paulson, I think, is the actress's name. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was her, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who I haven't actually loved in any of her stuff yet. She's better in this, but again, everything that surrounds it, just everything else in the movie, it begins with a very, and given that it's Shyamalan, I don't think this is any surprise, very strong identity or sense of where it came from. Like, the first half of it is super evocative of Unbreakable. Unbreakable is this movie that's kind of known, my screenwriting teacher used to always say, the entire movie, all of Unbreakable is one act. And he didn't necessarily say that in a bad way, but he said it's hard to pull off and that it might get boring at times. And if you go back and watch that, I definitely see how it could be argued either way, three act or one act. Because basically the entire movie is the first act of a superhero movie where they discover they're a superhero. And then the rest of the movie takes place, right?
Sure.
So from that point of view, yes, Unbreakable is just one act. There's lots of long takes. It's very easy on the dialogue, you know? There's not a lot of words are spoken. There's lots of quiet moments, lots of sideways glances, even if you remember, between Bruce Willis and his son, which his son is played by the same kid this movie. Yeah. And he's been doing other stuff. I didn't recognize him from Unbreakable since. So,
oh, that's funny.
His son takes on the role of the Oracle basically in this movie. So he's like calling the shots and like working from a computer back at the home. So it's cool. I liked that. Like, initially I was like, cool. I like where this is beginning as Bruce Willis kind of traipses about town, solving little crimes and fighting crime and stuff like that. Bruce Willis, I was hoping, wouldn't phone something in, you know, this latter half of his career.
Oh yeah. Come on. He's
hasn't been great.
No, he's, he
this is better. And I don't know if that's because the role demands less of him or if it's just, I wanted to see it. But he's still, you can see it. You can see.
I don't think he likes acting anymore.
I don't know.
I feel like he's just like, I'm doing this for money. I don't care.
I don't know. But I do think it's cool in that it does evoke Unbreakable. And also because as the movie appears to go on, it seems to, I don't know, I would attribute it to Shyamalan because regardless of what has happened, I think he's incredibly skilled and can be. And I think this is a decision he wouldn't have made on accident type thing. The movie very much appears to become a hybrid of Split and Unbreakable. Like, it maintains some of those scenes, some of those, you know, quiet moments. Split is not that movie. Split was nowhere near Unbreakable. And some of those appear to seep in or get combined with Unbreakable throughout the rest of this movie, throughout Glass, through the latter half of Glass especially. And I think that's cool. I think that's really cool. If you can especially get into your head about it, that might be more entertaining and pretty much everything else. Unfortunately, the dialogue gets a little rough. There's incidental dialogue in this thing, like when scenes come up on conversations that are taking place or conversations between the insane asylum employees that are like, oh, did you see the game last night or something like that? They are so freaking bad. They are so bad. They're so bad they take you out of the movie. It's insane how bad they are.
I love that.
Yeah. So that's a bummer. And the last 40 minutes of the movie just kind of happen. It doesn't really, I feel like, maintain a lot of the themes. It gets a little bit action heavy, but the action isn't great. Some of the stuff you see with McAvoy is pretty cool, like the way he throws people around, and there is a larger theme at play, and it is that comic book theme, like what's history and what's not. And it kind of ends, it's not like a classic Shyamalan twist, but you could see it's that final statement that you didn't think was coming. And I think in the end, I do like it. I like what's being said, but it feels unearned and kind of tossed off in some ways that make it a little less impactful. So I would say still watch it, especially if you're a big Unbreakable fan.
Yeah, I mean,
if you like both movies, for sure, too. But it's not as good as either one of the movies that come before it.
I couldn't imagine it would be. But yeah, it's on our list. It's queued up.
Queued up is a good spot for it.
Queue it up. I'm going to barbecue it up.
All right. Next.
Oh, that's me, huh?
I mean, who am I to say?
Glass is just, I just can't get it out of my head now. Yeah, Beth and I went and saw Midsommar, and it's Ari Aster's new movie. Ari Aster did Hereditary, which I know I talked about it, and I loved it. Fantastic movie. Toni Collette.
It's amazing.
Deserved the Oscar for that. I loved Olivia Williams, and I thought The Favorite was incredible. I understand why they gave her the Oscar. Eh, Toni Collette should have won it, though.
Has she not won something yet? I really do like Toni Collette. Speaking of her. The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, there we go. So I knew going into this, I had an idea going into this what that tone was going to be. He very much so, I think, has his voice, and he's already, like, he's in it. He's ready to use it. And the similarities in that, the way he tells the story, they're,
you can tell
right there. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. And it's not that it's something that you don't walk into it going, I know what's going to happen. It's just, there's a familiarity there where, okay, this is his movie. You know, it's like you watch a Wes Anderson movie, you don't necessarily know what the hell it's going to be, but you know it's a Wes Anderson movie.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, so similar thing there. And the story on this it was different than I thought it was to a point. I knew going into it, it was very much so hearkening back to The Wicker Man and some of these other cult movies that are more of a
like about cults, not necessarily a cult.
And it's not even about the cult so much as it is, you know, it's a lot of these things that they're druidic in nature. There's something that has to do with getting in touch with yourself and the outsiders coming in and either being welcomed or not, and not understanding the customs, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the way they work it in this is the main character, she, and I can't remember any of the names. The main character, cool. her sister tapes a hose to her face and sucks down carbon monoxide from the car in the garage, but also killed her parents with the same carbon monoxide.
Okay.
So she finds out, our main character finds out that her family is dead, and she calls her boyfriend, who we've already found out is not really into her and kind of wants to dump her, and his two other friends are kind of like, I don't know, maybe you should dump her. We're going to be going to Sweden soon, because one of his other friends is a Swedish guy that was like an exchange student doing college over here. So they're like, they invite her along, and so they all go to Sweden, and they go to his little village, and his little village is, of course, this, you know, off the beaten path thing, and it's very... it's kind of everything you've seen in the movie, where in the commercials, the trailers and stuff, where everybody's wearing all white, and there's all, like, the buildings are a little sparse and stuff. And, as they continue on, they learn more about what's going on, and there is the big shocking moment comes, I think, towards the end of the first act, maybe the kind of the beginning of the second act, where they kind of see the three visitors kind of now see, or four visitors, I guess, now are seeing just how extreme this is and how it's a very different culture. And it's very interesting in that two of the characters who have been they're friendly suddenly become at odds with each other, because one of them is an anthropologist, and he decides he wants to do his dissertation on their festival, whereas the boyfriend has, we find out earlier on that he's supposed to be in college, he has no direction, doesn't know what he wants to do, suddenly wants to do his thesis on that cult, whatever. So you end up with this kind of like weird back and forth between them, and the girlfriend is still kind of like, the entire movie she is, for her, like, it's all about family. The whole movie is completely about family. Okay. And the way it all works out and how it flows, where he goes with it, the imagery in this movie is outrageously wonderful. He has this fantastic, I think one of my favorite parts of the movie is that he breaks up sections of the movie. Like, you know those movies that they I don't know what it's called, but they throw up the placard and, you know, it says 2 hours ago.
Interstitial, sure.
And then, you know, 6 days ago, whatever. And they do, okay, a bunch of them, you know? So he does that, but in a really, really subtle way. It's not really subtle, but he does it in a more subtle way than throwing up a black screen with white lettering. There are all these tapestries, and the movie opens with a giant tapestry, and it sits on this giant tapestry for enough time for you to kind of look at it, but not necessarily comprehend everything you're seeing. So of course, the minute it comes up, I'm like looking for it. I'm like, okay, I know this is the whole movie right here. I know it is. I just don't know what it is. So we find more tapestries throughout the movie, and as he's moving the characters through different thought processes and where they're going and getting them in, he totally shows these tapestries in these one shot, and then it goes away. Like, it's never in the background. He purposefully gets that tapestry, and there are so many things in the tapestries that do happen, but not the way you think, but based on the tapestry. And the one thing that I will point out, the one that I'll give away, because there's a lot to the movie. This becomes a spoiler, but okay. I'm not going to explain the how, and don't ask me the how. But there's a on the tapestry, a bear that's standing up that's totally on fire.
How?
Earlier on in the movie, you actually see a bear in a cage. And one of the characters is like, are we not going to acknowledge that there's a bear here? And the person that's with them, that's showing them around, goes, it's a bear. Come on. And like, that's it. The bear does get burned, but it's not the bear that's burned. And it's a really, really, really great twist on that. And yeah, it's a spoiler, so you'll go into it kind of knowing something's going to be funky. And
oh, I feel like that's not so bad. If you're going to see a bear, you're going to be like, I bet that comes back later.
Oh yeah, yeah. But it was great. It was the connection to it. And I admit, we saw the bear on fire, and Beth and I both thought the same thing. We're like, oh, I don't want to watch them burn a bear. Like, I don't burn even like, I don't want to see that. I hate that. It's the John Wick thing, you know? Like, I appreciate that those movies are completely, like, dependent and based around the idea his little dog was murdered by the idiot from Game of Thrones. So Midsommar, great movie, has a fantastic resolution, the way it builds and builds, and that ending is, I mean, it's...
Okay.
It's a good one, man. That those... those two movies, that this guy is 2 for 2 on a very real, like, high level 2 for 2.
How is the movie doing? I haven't actually looked around to see if people are liking it or not.
Everybody that I know that's seen it loves it. I don't know how well it's doing in terms of finances.
Well, I mean, Hereditary, I couldn't help but hear about. Like, I just heard about that all over the place.
Yeah.
People talking about it and whatnot. And I haven't seen the same thing for Midsommar yet, but I'm also probably a little bit more unplugged nowadays. So
I don't know. I when it came out, I saw, you know, all of the people I follow on Twitter that are horror movie reviewers, what have you, all of them saw it, you know, the night of or the day before or whatever. Loved it. Like, no, I haven't seen anybody have a bad thing to say about the movie. I just don't know that I've seen a lot of things said about the movie. So
according to you, I probably won't be seeing it anytime soon anyway.
Likely not.
Little graphic. Just like Spider-Man Far From Home.
It's super graphic. Tell me more, I think, or less.
So Spider-Man Far From Home, I've had a fun trip with this thing. I saw the trailer not long after Endgame, thankfully, because it spoils that whole movie. But when I saw that trailer, we didn't talk about this on or off the air, I was kind of turned off. Like, that trailer seemed to me very, was it Phase 4 now that Marvel is in? It seemed to me really, I'm pretty sure it's Phase 4, really Phase 4 heavy. Like, Endgame was over. I think there are some things out there that say it's still Phase 3, whatever. The fact that it was bringing in like multiverse stuff, I was like, oh great, this is going to be the next. It turned me off, honestly. I was like, I liked Homecoming an amazing amount. That's probably, I guess, until Spider-Verse came out, the best Spider-Man movie that ever was. So I went into this kind of, I don't know, not skeptical, but colored in that way. And it didn't really change my mind about anything.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
okay.
And for reasons maybe that I didn't expect, I don't think the writing is up to snuff. Like, I like Tom Holland. I like Zendaya a whole ton. I think she's my favorite Mary Jane for sure, and her take on Mary Jane specifically. But the entire first half, just lackluster to me.
Okay.
The writing didn't seem strong. And yes, a lot of it. Okay, I am not going to spoil this.
No, we're spoiling this. No, we are.
You think so?
Yeah, no, we are. We are.
Well, I know you already know because you look up spoilers and stuff. But that's right. You wanted to talk. Okay, all right. We're going to spoil this thing. Spider-Man Far From Home.
Because I don't know, and I was curious about certain things. So I'm,
okay.
I only know. So,
you know, okay, wait, I can do this. I can tell you everything that's not spoilery, and then we can just go off the deep end. I have the words afterthought of a movie typed here in my notes, which I could take because nobody was in the theater with me at the time. I don't know if that says anything. I don't think it does, because when I looked it up and I saw it the week it came out, there was a showing every 30 minutes, and that's not counting 3D or RPX, right? The wannabe IMAX or whatever it is.
Right.
So whatever. It just takes place in this very uncomfortable space between, you know, Endgame and whatever the Marvel movies are going to be. It ended up being Phase 4 heavy, not in the way I thought. Right.
Well, and I mean, it's kind of the first Phase 4 movie, isn't it?
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I thought it was Phase 4 heavy in the trailer because it was setting up multiverse stuff and stuff like that. It ends up being Phase 4 heavy because it just doesn't appear to go anywhere, which has been the hook for these Spider-Man. That has been actually one of the stronger points of Homecoming, right? Is that it was this small town, friendly neighborhood thing. Hey, Spider-Man, do a backflip, you know, type thing. Like, that is part of what made that movie great. This tries to keep some of that and not at the same time. So it's just middle of the road in more than one spot, I guess you could say. It tries to split the difference and maybe successfully does, because it's very mediocre for the first half. And whatever happens in the second half doesn't really fix it, although I will say it's better. And now we can talk about that.
So one of the things that I think turned me off about this movie from the trailers, I think you've taken Spider-Man. Then you've taken Spider-Man to space. Now you're taking Spider-Man to Italy? Spain? Morocco? Where is he?
Yes.
Where are they at? European country? Are they in
Venice for a bit, and then I think but they're over Europe.
Okay.
Yeah, they're on a school trip.
It is to me, this was that to me is a that's a huge negative. Spider-Man, we just saw him have the biggest battle of his life outside of his hometown. Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man should not immediately be taken to, in terms of film, should not immediately be taken out of New York. That's one thing that gets me. Like, I think something should have been a New York story.
Yeah.
This should not be, it's a weird thing to take him out of his environment multiple movies in a row. We're like, he's not going to spend all the time in Italy. He's never going to, that's not where he's a friendly neighborhood. You know.
I mean, it definitely would have helped. I think regardless, you're getting at a larger issue, which is that it doesn't do a good job of transitioning into whatever phase 4 was, but also just out of what phase 3 was. Like, it is this limbo, this in-between thing in a zillion different ways. And it's a bummer because, I feel like they could have gone back to small time. Like, they could have given us a little bit of what Homecoming was still. They could have milked that for a little bit longer and it would have been fine, but they just didn't pull it off. I don't know how they could have done it better, right?
I'm sure.
The worst part of this job is talking about the mistakes and offering up no solutions. So
not that anybody would listen anyways.
No, yeah.
I mean to our, like, nobody in Hollywood. Anyways, one of the things though that totally did make me want to go and see the movie was Fishbowl.
Okay.
They gave him the fishbowl.
Spoil. Okay. It starts out with Jake Gyllenhaal being Mysterio from an alternate universe where these elementals have destroyed his world and he's followed them to Earth where he's now fighting them to save Earth. What ends up happening is that Jake Gyllenhaal is a disillusioned ex-Stark employee. So a part of where also I think this movie fails is where it tries to recreate what it did with Homecoming. Like, it's another small time, you know, kind of B character. Like, if you remember,
The Vulture.
Yes. Michael Keaton, for gosh sake, was making money off of cleaning up what happened in New York, and Stark came along and was like, no, or the government did, or I can't remember who did, but they affected his livelihood so that he had to go black market and all this stuff. That was awesome. Like, was super cool.
That works in every respect.
So
because,
well.
And because, I mean, at the very base, it answers one of those questions that every single person kind of has but brushes off because it's a superhero movie. That cleans up all this.
It builds out the universe in a really cool way. It does it in a small way that movie was able to take advantage of.
Yeah.
And it does it with Michael Keaton, who that role is friggin' made for.
Yeah.
Gyllenhaal didn't do a horrible job in this role. I think also he it was a good cast, but he plays this disillusioned. So there was a movie. Oh my gosh. We just watched it. Where Tony Stark does the whole de-aging thing because he's created Barf. There's a virtual reality thing where he gets to examine, he gets therapy through holographic with substance type thing. I don't know the science behind it. That was created by Jake Gyllenhaal's character retroactively, now we're speaking. And he becomes disillusioned with the whole thing. His product, his project was canceled or screwed up in some way by Stark, so he wants revenge. Basically, the whole multiverse thing and him fighting these elementals is fake. It's all just drones and holograms. Okay?
Okay. No, we're good. I'm fine.
Following me here?
Yeah, no, this is good.
I can see how people would have trouble with that. Obviously, that's a stretch. Like, that strains credulity that you would be able to pull something off at that large of a scale. I don't have a problem with that, actually. Like, I can see how somebody would. I'm able to suspend belief here. For that,
okay.
You know,
sure.
And honestly, as that turn happens, the movie gets way more interesting. And there is a moment where I thought, okay, that's kind of cool. If the writing itself is now better from here on out, that's pretty cool, right? Maybe the whole thing was an illusion, and that's why it was so kind of lackluster up till now, right? That doesn't happen, right?
Nah.
That obviously doesn't happen. It gets better. The idea, you know, and the closer he gets to Gyllenhaal, and okay, there is a fight with Gyllenhaal where they go full Mysterio. Like they don't even care about being all that believable with the holograms and stuff like that. They just go full on Mysterio. It's filmed in an amazing way. Spider-Man doesn't know, you know, like up is down, down is up. Pets are sleeping together. How does it go?
Dogs and cats living together.
It's nuts, right? And it's beautiful. It's amazing. It's probably the best part in the entire film because Spider-Man's at rock bottom at the end of that, even though very quickly that whole actual exchange between him and Happy is... Not up again the writing. I don't know who wrote this thing. I don't know
John
if it was
Watts, I think, didn't he?
No, well he directed again. I don't know. It's in any event, that fight is amazing and sets up a good conundrum. Like how does he get out of that type thing? Any good movie is that. Unfortunately he gets out of it by, you know, some more bad dialogue and the action is good. The action is really good in some instances, but it just kind of doesn't all add up. And in the end, after he defeats Gyllenhaal, he has this line that you can tell somebody, like maybe existed to a greater extent somewhere in some script, but he says after doing all this stuff, and I guess at the very end, he's doctored a video. This is how the movie ends, actually. He's doctored a video where it looks like Spider-Man was responsible for everything that happened and killed Gyllenhaal in cold blood type thing.
Sure.
But he mutters this line as he's dying. Nowadays, people will believe anything, right? And it's this beautiful line, this beautiful hint at what this movie could have been had it delved in maybe a little deeper to... You know, like that's a very, not ripped from the headlines, but how that's a zeitgeisty line right there, right?
Sure,
with,
sure.
With the, you know, truth, it's not, truth uncertainty is the name of the actual term. What is the alternative facts, right? Yeah. You know, that whole thing from however many months ago.
The nonsense phrase.
Yes, the lies and the mistruths and just everything that's been going on for the past, oh, I don't know, what's it been, almost 4 years?
Roughly
speaking. There's something there. This movie could have been something more with that line. There's a hint at it. But it just isn't. It's too little too late. It doesn't really tie into anything. And it's a bummer in the end of a movie.
But does it have one of your favorite bumpers of all time or stingers?
I'm struggling to think of what the stinger was.
I think it was J. Jonah Jameson. It was.
Oh, that's right. He's back. Oh, okay. Sure. That was pretty good. And he's like an Alex Jones figure now. Which they could have stolen. I didn't play the game, but didn't they do that in the game? Isn't J. Jonah Jameson like just a...
He's like on the radio, yeah.
Internet yeller guy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the word for it.
It is. So Eric Summers and Chris McKenna wrote this this film. Chris McKenna wrote it. Eric Summers did the screenplay. Both of these guys did Spider-Man... Homecoming.
Did they do Homecoming?
Yep. They did.
Man.
They did Ant-Man and Wasp. They did Jumanji, wow. Welcome to the Jungle, the Lego Batman movie.
Wow.
So I think they have been
largely missed for me, actually. Most of the movies you just said right then, I haven't enjoyed.
I was going to say, they're not winners. I really like Ant-Man and Wasp, but not anywhere as much as I liked the first Ant-Man.
No.
And, yeah. So, okay, let me ask you this now. Were you familiar with Mysterio as the comic book character?
Like, I mean, I was big into Eric Larson's run of the Sinister Six, the one in the 90s.
So in the comics, he's a special effects guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why all the holograms and stuff was, he knew how to make them.
So he's fake too. He's not an actual magician in the comics either.
Well, no, actually I think he does know some, but he's not like magic, like it's sleight of hand stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, he's
I didn't
not,
mind that. I like
No, I'm glad they went that route with it, cuz I was a little concerned when I saw him, like they got to be like the trailer where they show like him fighting Hydro Man or whatever,
the water elemental, probably
the water elemental. Yeah. I was like, okay, that's gotta be an illusion. It can't be real. But
you would assume so. Yeah, I guess maybe shame on me for
getting
into the whole multiverse stuff. I do like the update though. I like the update of the character. They give him it's like an AR fishbowl, like that he's actually wearing when, you know, his costume is taken away, because that's just an illusion. You know, I like the update to the character. It's just the story and the writing wasn't up to snuff.
Sure.
Sorry. I apologize.
Don't ever apologize to me.
For this movie.
Oh, fair. Okay.
Also, for going on so long, this went longer than I thought. Do you want to add anything? Do you have anything else?
No.
Okay. podcast@bookclubformovies.com if you want to talk about anything. We will definitely do Sunshine next week. You may get two shows this week. We'll be back at it with zero hit points as well. Thanks for hanging out.